Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangled in Fort
Lauderdale. I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing support. If you like this show, you can help it to grow by sharing it with your friends and family. God knows the algorithms aren't going to help us out at all. And you can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. I mentioned Iconic. Speaking of Iconic, they've got a great offer for you. There's a link in the show notes. You can try it out for 10 days for free and just see if it's something that you like. They're doing amazing work there. It's kind of like the Netflix of the alternative media, except, you know, without the cuties and all the trans shit. They've got great health and wellness component to it. Obviously, all of David Icke's videos are there. They're doing weekly shows. They're doing amazing things. So if you're so inclined, go take a look, try it before you buy it, see what you think. Oh my God, I feel like I am beating the proverbial dead horse. But I'll tell you what, if we keep going the way we're going, you're going to be wishing you had a dead horse to eat at some point. They are destroying the supply chains. It is not theory. It is fact. We can see this happening well in advance. You've got to get yourself prepared. I've got a sponsor that can help you do it. But if you don't want to use my sponsor, I'm cool with that. Just get yourself ready one way or the other. Start thinking about these things. My Patriot Supply was nice enough to create a landing page for us where you can just go directly to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. If you do that, you can get discounts on 4 week supplies of food. You can get discounts on 3 month supplies of food. They have seeds, they have emergency coffee. They have water filtration, air purification, camping gear. They've got basically everything that you want. So if you are looking for a one-stop shop to take care of all of your planning and preparing needs, food included, you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and just see what you think over there. If not, go to the grocery store, add a little extra to your cart every time, start being proactive about this. You don't want to be reactive. That got us in trouble last time when it came to COVID and toilet paper. I don't want to fight some asshole in aisle 4 to get the last bag of rice. You know what I mean? So plan accordingly. You'll be grateful that you did. Also, to our friends at C60 Purple Power. I mean, Ken the Scientist, he is the CEO and founder of the company. He is a great dude. I do podcasts with him every now and then. He lives not too far from me. He's got a deep understanding of where we're coming from and the battle that we're facing. He's got the best product out there, the best C60 formula out there. You can go to shopc60.com and use the promo code macro if you are so inclined. But I would just suggest going there and reading about it, finding out what C60 is. It's the guy's won the Nobel Prize for discovering it. It's a gigantic deal. It's the most powerful antioxidant known to man, and you can buy it. Of course, you're never going to hear about it on traditional media because they don't want you to be healthy. They don't want you to be feeling good, but we do. We want you to stay around as long as possible. So go to shopc60.com, use the promo code macro on your way out to save yourself some money. All the links to these sponsors will be in the show notes as well. So I don't expect you to have a pen and write it down. You can just click the links if you are so inclined. And of course, anything that supports the sponsors helps to support the show as well. We obviously appreciate that. Well, I'll tell you, we have a returning guest, one of my favorite people. She is the director of Vanishing of the Bees. She is the owner of Honey Colony. Go check honeycolony.com for all your bee-related, honey-related products. I did some Christmas shopping there a while ago. Miriam Hanane is back. How are you, Miriam? Good to see you.
Hi, Charlie. I'm very happy to be here. And I just want to say that actually we sell way more than honey. And
I know you do.
Been around for more than a decade, one of the first in the nutraceutical space before we were attacked by big tech and literally the government. And we sell silver, molecular hydrogen, super foods. And it's all about optimizing your biology rather than eradicating your immune system.
What a novel idea.
Imagine that.
Of course, that's why the government wants to destroy you. Can't have you talking about actual health benefits. Can't have you selling products that actually help people. How will Big Pharma stay in business if we allow this insanity?
Right. I think also having someone that can say, I've learned literally how to walk again. I've reversed lupus and fibromyalgia. I'm, you know, pushing 50. So then that really, they don't like that. They don't want people to be healthy and optimize their biology, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no money in health. There's keeping people healthy. There's no money in keeping people dead. The money's right in the middle, sick enough so that they always need the products and keep coming back. Well, we know better than that. I think we've got a really smart audience here. They understand what's going on. They're looking for alternatives to that. Honey Colony is a great place to go and take a look. That's what I always say. It's never a hard sell with me with any of the products or companies that I know or represent. It's, hey, here it is. Just go take a look. See if you see something that you like. Like I said, I bought a bunch of stuff for my family for Christmas from Honey Colony because they're hard to shop for. And I found things there that they would like. So, you know.
Awesome. We also have just Simply Transformative. We also were persecuted and attacked for being one of the first to sell CBD. And of course, now it is saturated with a lot of crap, but people need to keep in mind that it should be full spectrum and support the entourage effect and be organic because cannabis is a bioremediator and was used literally in Chernobyl to clean the soil and remove heavy metals. Really? So you want to make sure. Yeah. Yes. It's a bioremediating plant. So if you're not eating organic, cannabis or CBD kind of defeats the purpose since the plant itself will be full of toxins. Yeah. So,
well, I'll tell you, we've got to take control of our health. It's we can't outsource that to anybody else to think for us or to, you know, even your doctors. Your doctors don't know as much about health as you might think that they know. They know what it means to give the correct answer on a test going through the Rockefeller medical schools in order to get a passing grade. But as far as managing your health, especially those that have been out of school for a long, long time, man, they're worrying about their day-to-day practice. They're in a rut, man. They're accepting, you know, logoed pens from pharmaceutical reps and saying, yeah, sure, give me your products. Well, maybe I'll suggest them, but they're not digging into this. They don't know anything about, well, I shouldn't say they don't know much about health. They don't know as much about health as we think that they do. So it's always great to have resources like you, because God knows you did your homework on anyone that hasn't seen Vanishing of the Bees. Let's start there, because I think that's a really important movie to see, because you know, you talk about, and you've been on before, and we talked about this colony collapse disorder. To me, when I heard that, and when I was watching, you know, I knew about it before I watched your movie, but But when you started talking about it, the first thing that in my head immediately went to, oh, like sudden infant death syndrome. They've made up a fake thing to place the blame on this. And oh, look, you know, what's killing all these babies? Oh, it must just be sudden infant death syndrome. Certainly not the vaccines we're injecting them with the day before. So when I saw the colony collapse disorder, I was like, oh, they're big agro is using the same scam big pharma uses.
It's the same playbook. And we are the bees, like I've said many times, we're the ones who are slowly being poisoned by sublethal doses. And the bees are us. They're an emblem of what's happening to us. Death by a thousand cuts. It's about the slow kill. Let's make money while we kill them. But of course, when you realize that the food supply is poison, why would you trust this behemoth, like you said, Rockefeller medicine that incentivizes drugs? And like I had shared the last union of the unwanted on food, when you walk into a doctor's office and the assistant that's representing the doctor is in a mask and has M&Ms and Coca-Cola on the desk and could lose 60 pounds, yeah, you're the one I'm going to put my health, my hands, going to trust you with my health. No thanks. Yeah.
No thanks. And so I know that from watching Vanishing of the Bees, you are not afraid to tackle big topics. You definitely like to get into the details. And that's why when over the last year or so we've been chatting and you said, I'm working on a George Floyd book. I said, the minute that is done, I want to talk about it.
And yeah,
so here we are, because I want to talk about this. George Floyd, a multi-layered PSYOP examined. Talk about Why did there's plenty of things that get us riled up and get us angry. There's plenty of scams. What was it about this one that really grabbed you?
That's a really good question, because I asked myself what would get my interest enough. Like with Vanishing of the Bees, I spent 5 years of my life and I didn't anticipate to become obsessed or become an expert on this George Floyd PSYOP. And I understand, I preface interviews saying, I understand that there's fatigue, but this event really ushered in a color revolution. This event is still being used. George Floyd's name is uttered every day. Trials are still going on. Laws are still being changed. And this, I believe, is a multi-layered PSYOP. So just to ground on why did I pursue this, we were in the jungle, Zach Voorhees and I, on May 25th, 2020. And it was early evening, and he asked me to come choke him. And I'm like, why? Oh, I wish, you know, I was hoping you'd ask this. No. So I said, why do you want me to choke you? And he's like, I'm recreating the George Floyd challenge. So people, I guess, around the world were, you know, Steven Crowder has done this. Others right. have done this. And I tentatively pressed down on his neck. But I said to him, if you really want to know how this guy died, we have to call the coroner's office. So the next day I called the medical examiner and they told me that this would take weeks and weeks and weeks, as real investigations do. But yet literally hours later, the CNN put out something about the preliminary. So I sensed, oh, they're seeding discord as they were riling up what was going to become mm-hmm. protests and a summer of love and burning the country down. That was one thing. I also called Giovanni Thunstrom, the other employer of George Floyd at the Conga room. So this is May 26th or May 27th. And I noticed, like, I look for patterns. I think it's also important to relay how much work goes into real investigations, mm-hmm. because I'm not only writing and documenting, but I'm applying for FOIA. I'm getting exhibits. I'm getting things like when I ask the courts that they know me in Minnesota now, the Hennepin County. And I said, so how many people have licensed the exhibit for Derek Chauvin's body-worn camera that conveniently fell under Squad 320 early on? And he said, not many. And I'm like, what? So yeah. The fact that if you think like there's a big planet and I'm one of the few that on this planet has purchased footage that no one else has seen, because I wanted to lay it out. So I think it was a series of lies that I caught. Also, I'll give another early on. I noticed that the sister, supposed sister Bridget Floyd, was on, I believe, TMZ or doing the circuits, and she had a t-shirt that said, "I can't breathe." So if this is like May 27th, and I'm like, oh, well, is that an essential shop printing? Where'd you get that t-shirt, honey? Where did you get that t-shirt? Literally, like, did someone FedEx it to you? And so when I went online and I did a search for "I can't breathe" Benjamin Crump and George Floyd, then I'm like, wow, Eric Garner also said "I can't breathe," another black man who was killed by police brutality and racism. So they're recirculating this right when we are mandating masks. So you're suffocating from a face diaper, and what comes to mind? "I can't breathe." And this becomes the crying call of BLM. So all these things, one after the other, seeing actual documents, like, it's not mentioned whose car is that. That's not George Floyd's car. George Floyd was registered to have a Dodge Ram. So then I see their scrubbing of VIN all the way to 2018. And why is that? Why are we witnessing, or I was witnessing in real time, things disappearing? So I think it's a series of gaps, gaping holes in this narrative, and banking on the fact that people don't pay attention to details. And when you put all these details together, you create this like tapestry of truth, and it shows a bigger picture, but who's going to document all of that? So I feel like so many things have occurred that are synchronistic, that I feel, not to give importance to myself, but maybe I'm the one who's meant to cement this for the history books. And I love whodunits. I grew up reading Alfred Hitchcock and Hardy Boys, and was super nerd. So in itself, it's a very interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you sent me the footage. Speaking of body cam footage, I've watched the 51-minute camera from Speedway, from showing one angle of it. I've watched the Derek Chauvin body camera footage that, like you mentioned, goes black out. You can still hear the audio, but blacks out the video of it for a while. You said that's because it rolled under the car, or went under the car?
Yes, it rolled under the
car. I watched the Cup Foods color high definition in-store footage of George Floyd and his buddy Maurice acting super sketchy in the store, trying to pass off fake money. I watched footage from another angle showing George Floyd. I'm not sure where it was, but it was showing George walking across the street dancing.
Yeah, it's from the Dragon Walk footage. So that's no one's ever seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, to be fair, like, a guy walking across the street dancing doesn't prove anything. But it was an unusual, I mean, he was like, you know, dancing like he was at the parking lot of a Grateful Dead concert or something. I mean, it was a little unusual.
Can I say something to that?
Please.
My girlfriend watched it, and she had a brother in Hollywood. She works in Hollywood, say, you know, we take a lot of things from the Egyptians. And when she saw the way he was, she's like, it's stepping, like he was stepping almost like ritualistically. Of course, that's her opinion. Right. And why is that special, him walking? It's just that no one has seen footage of him returning to the car. We were told by the mainstream media that George, Maurice, and Shawanda, all convicted felons, met at Cup Foods by coincidence. And I have footage now that shows no, Maurice came to the scene with George, and when they park and they go to the store, they go out in front of Cup Foods as if they're scouting and they're looking at the street. So I'm looking for very subtle little things that are flaws in to show us what the truth is. And so, for instance, when you mention Maurice Lester Hall, the fact that he's counting cash, and we know, according to the owner, or I know, he told me that he tried to buy an iPad with fake money. Then by listening to the videos like hundreds of times for details on what is being said, Maurice and Shawanda are being, for lack of a, they're being babysat by Peter Chang, the park police. And at one point, for instance, well, repeatedly rather, he says, ask Mr. Adam. Mr. Adam knows I'm cool. Who's Mr. Adam? Well, that's in my book, and that's in the documentary showing a cover up and why there is a cover up from inside Cup Foods, and looking at the history of Cup Foods with the police, and just establishing that if you were trying to buy a fake iPad, iPad with fake money, why didn't the police, why weren't they called on Maurice or Shawanda? Yes, he's acting squirrely. George is. It's also quite weird that just a year before, almost to the day, well, in May of 2019, George gets arrested and does a similar song and dance where he says, my mama just died. He swallows pills to get, you know, to hide them. This time it's OxyContin, which is also made by the Mexican cartel. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot.
There is a, so what is the official story of what they were doing inside Cup Food? Because I watched the video and frankly, they all look sketchy to me. Like they all look like they were kind of loyal. You know, it's a store you're in. It's a convenience store, so to speak. I mean, they have like electronics in there. They have food, like packaged food. They have like hot food. They have bus passes. You know, these, you're in, you're out. You're not hanging out for a long, long time. He seemed like he was hanging out. He was looking around. He's waiting for something to happen, counting money multiple times. Maurice was going in and out of the store. What so were they waiting for the right time to try and make this purchase, or was like, how did that all factor into this?
I mean, that's, I say in the narration, are they loitering or are they scheming for something to happen? Now, Chris Martin, the boy who took the 20, this is like a little synchronistic that Sarah Westhall is from Minnesota, and I've been speaking to her about it, and then she put me in touch with Chris Martin through a connection. So here I was, I didn't interview him on camera, and I felt that he was genuine. He said that it is common that people come and loiter. Why? He wanted to put things on his tab. He wanted to put the 20 on his tab. His Black life is really messed up because he was traumatized. As opposed to, let's say, a Darnella Frazier that banked $700,000 and won a Pulitzer Prize for her journalism by conveniently filming after the 10-minute mark. So I'll tell you what I believe now after the fact. One, let's look at, let's say you by accident have a fake 20 and you're in the, they're in the car, right? And then they're in there, and the story goes that eventually George took a little snooze. He took some Percocet, and you have two young men go and try to retrieve the 20 or the smokes. Mm-hmm. And both times George is not the one in control. Maurice is the one who's doing all the talking. Why? Well, Maurice tells me, because I've recently started speaking to him, although now he may be on to me, although I genuinely want to know the truth, so he's no longer answering my calls. But he said that George was not paying attention to him and couldn't find his key fob, because I was like, why wouldn't you leave? What would, if it was a holiday, here, dude, here's a real 20. Leave us the F alone. It's a holiday. It's Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And when the cops come at 8:08, Maurice's door is wide open. They don't know that the cops are going to come. Surely they must have said something. So is this a trap? Are we trapping George? Mm-hmm. Was this like Ozarks, money laundering operation. Everything is closed. This guy, George, is getting high on his own supply and he's becoming maybe a liability. Mm-hmm. And is he set up? Does he know partially that this is going to be Rodney 2.0? They say, so there's a possibility that he took the drugs because he was engaging in a self-sacrifice where he was going to be immortalized. There's that possibility. Mm-hmm. That he knew, say, keep saying I can't breathe. And then at one point it becomes real. Do I believe, like, let's say, are you familiar with Joel Gilbert?
Yeah.
So Joel has been consulting with me. I watched the Trayvon Martin hoax as part of my extensive mm-hmm. research. He thinks these cases are a dime a dozen, that you can just pluck one up, that Benjamin Crump gets them on his desk. Mm-hmm. However, I believe it's all too perfect. It's and in the federal trial that nobody really covered or knew was going on, to me, even if I didn't know all of that, I know it sounds like it was an exercise drill. And then realizing that this is a live exercise. Everything's a live exercise. They're constantly taking data. They're using us as lab rats. Data is the most prized asset, and they keep on building. So nobody knows that after the George Floyd, they launched a huge surveillance operation called Open Safety Net. And during the protests, they were using AI because we're ultimately, this is pushing us forward into a police minority report kind of scenario where you're also judged based on a camera when there's camera perspective bias, right? Everybody thinks that Derek choked, engaged in a chokehold, or that's the mainstream narrative, when in fact there's camera perspective bias. He that was a training technique, and he moved around his knee. He had the other foot down. This guy was 6'6". They all thought he had excited delirium. Why Derek continued to put his knee, look straight directly at the camera after the fact, that is questionable. Was he activated? Is he also a sacrificial lamb that's supposed to symbolize all the bad cops out there?
Well, he, during this footage, you can hear them talking multiple times saying, what are you on, man? What are you on? Like, wait, 6'6", 240, and on something? Yeah, that's a dangerous combination. I watched them try to put him in the car, in the back seat, the back driver's side seat of the car. They had a hard time getting him in. He did not want to go in. He kept saying, I'm claustrophobic. I don't want this. I'm claustrophobic. Put me in the front seat. They said, we're not putting you in the front seat. And he says, well, I'm claustrophobic. He starts to move back into the car. They go around the other side, the passenger side rear door, open that up. So now they've got both of the back doors opened up,
which is odd.
Pulling him out that way. So they put him in on the left side and they pulled him out on the right side, which was weird. And then put him down, put their knees on him. Now, this was what was interesting to me from seeing it from the perspective. You talked about camera perspective, the camera perspective from Speedway. Mm-hmm. When I could see that, because then I wasn't blocked by the other view, because this is a different angle of the knee on the neck and everything. And it's a little far away to tell the details of that. But one thing that did jump out at me was I was under the impression, probably due to the corporate horror media, that there were tons of people watching this. And in actuality, I only counted 7 that were standing around. Some people were coming and going. Some people finally wound up just kind of sticking around, but it wasn't a huge scene. There were a lot of people on the periphery, just crossing the street, walking, going in the store, doing, it was business as usual for the most part. But if I allowed the media to tell me what was going on, it was like this was happening in the middle of a fucking parade or something. Right. And that was not the case.
I want to say something to that. One, my trailer was gaining traction on YouTube and it was just taken out. They removed a video that I had, and it's been there almost a year. And then I did a video during about the autopsies, a tale of two autopsies early on. And the week of jury selection for the Derek Chauvin trial, they removed they removed that. In the trailer, from the milestone footage, from the Speedway, I do it three times, and I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but Thao, who's the control, he's controlling the traffic, is something playing? Do you hear something? Except a bazillion. He turns around and he can't say action, or so. Then I looked from his camera, and I have it in the trailer, I play it three times, and he just does this. And then all the bystanders, the stand-ins, move together. Now, prior to that, like you said, people are not paying attention. Mm-mm. And all those players on the scene, they do show up at the trial and they become paid. By the way, Maurice told me that they were paid. Maybe that's customary, but they made money from that. Now, so there's that. I don't know if you caught that little gesture. I don't know if we could do a share screen and I could.
Oh, I don't have it set up. Most of the people are listening anyway.
Okay. So. All right. So if you do include the link and you see halfway in, if you look at Thao's role and the fact that they all move in unison, is another weirdo moment. And while he's in the car, you know, his nose, maybe you noticed his nose was bleeding, and that was left for interpretation. Darnella says his nose is bleeding, but he's the one who bashed his face in front of the plexi twice. So why is that?
Right.
Why did he bash his own nose?
Make it look worse than it was, maybe? I don't know. But there is an interesting part in this video where after the whole situation has transpired, the ambulance has come, the ambulance has gone. I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but you made me think of this because of the person that was chatting. There's a guy that says to Chauvin, "Hey man, I know you know me. You know me. And he's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I know you from a couple weeks ago. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's yeah." And then Chauvin gets in the car, doesn't say anything, like cold-blooded, like no, I don't know, cold-blooded, but just, I would have been hopped up. Like my blood pressure would have been going. I would have been talking to my partner like, holy shit, that was crazy. He didn't say anything, did he?
No, he didn't say anything. It established that moment that also has never been seen, just establishes that they know Derek. I interviewed a police brutality activist of 40 years, and she told me that Derek is known as the warlord of Precinct 3.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Why, how do you get that name, the warlord of Precinct 3, when you're a cop, if you're not up to some I don't know, how did he get that name?
So let's get into that. Why he got that name, she did not tell me. I'm at the chapter, I'm 80% done with my book. I'm at the Derek Chauvin chapter. And I'm doing active investigations and calling people. I was not able to get anyone except one person, I'll get into it, to vie for this person. Carolyn Michael, his parents, would not speak with me, return my calls. At one point, someone who's helping, I'm now speaking to the appeals attorney. He saw my trailer and said, "Wow, this is good. I want to see the rest of it." I'm like, "Yeah, I want to see the rest of it too. I raised $1 million to make a beautiful B film, and I'm not able to raise $15,000 because of the censorship to make this. It's not popular. I guess, topic, the truth about this." So back to Derek, I tried to interview people. I found it bizarre. Maybe you can tell me if you've ever come across this. They put out, the government, a 79-page dossier of Derek Chauvin. So he's like a two-dimensional character. The media even says, even to his friends, Derek was an enigma. So why can't anyone come on record to speak about him? There was a woman who saw the trailer as well before I reached out to the appeals attorney, who said she's a friend of the family. And in my trailer, you see a boy say he probably OD'd. He was high off his cracker. And he's shushed up. So she had not seen that part. And when I said, okay, the mom doesn't have to talk to me, I'll talk to her. I'll tell her what I know. Because regardless, I believe in people have a constitutional right to a fair trial. And there's no question this guy was not given a fair trial. And he's arguably dead as well. He, Derek, worked for Maya Santamaria. Mm-hmm. And there was one case, because I'm in the Derek chapter. I'm like, okay, well, how am I going to link Derek with the Mexican cartel, Sinaloa, and Maya Santamaria? There's one case where Derek intervenes after a day on the scene working at El Nuevo, and he intercepted a gang, something gang related. Mm-hmm. Why I did a FOIA to get that case under appearances, where it would show the tattoos of appearances, what it would give away that it's the Sinaloa cartel. They redacted all of that. Oh. They consciously tried to scrub any links. Now I found out that Derek worked at another Mexican club that has ties to Mexican cartel. Very hard to find anything about this club. So I suspect, being an off-duty cop, he has a case in July 2022 on tax evasion. This is where the Ozarks come, when you have, you know, $90,000 where it's unaccounted for, right? Because you're cleaning money.
Yeah. 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 What is the relationship between Derek Chauvin and George Floyd? The pre-existing relationship between the two of them, because that seems like something that the media doesn't want to talk about.
Right. So to establish that, early on, there was a guy named David Pinney, that a black man that spoke to CBS, and it was a 50-minute interview where he says they butted heads. Then about 24, 48 hours later, the interview is recanted. When I call CBS to license the footage, they say that it's not been released, so I can't access it. The guy, David, says, recants and says that he confused George with another black guy, which in itself is racist. He's black. That's your boss, dude. He's 6'6". You confused it with another black guy. Bullshit.
Right. Right.
Bullshit.
Right.
So the word on the street is that they did know each other. And I will have to go to Minneapolis, because no one's going to really talk to me on the phone. That is the last frontier of going all the way and doing a proper job and looking under every single rock. I have posted in the past on Craigslist, if anybody knows, has any information on these two gentlemen in El Nuevo, within an hour, it's flagged and taken down. I asked Maurice last week, and he said, no, it is a big club. Mm-hmm. But as head of security and head bouncer, I just find it hard to believe. Now, Maya herself said early on that they knew each other. She also massaged her message. I have her on footage, and it's on my Gab TV channel, her saying in Spanish early on, I think it's like June 3rd, says this was a sacrifice in Spanish.
Right.
And then she says literalmente. She actually adds the word literal. So that caused me to look, well, do the Freemasons, do they have self-sacrifice rituals? Is this possible, especially with all the symbology of the twins, which symbolizes the hermetic principles of so as above, so below, and the twins theme. Even like Charlie, initially, they BS'd us and they said that it was 8 minutes and 46 seconds, which is the time in which the North Tower was hit by a plane in 9/11. And then it's like, oh, whoops, we didn't. That wasn't really 8 minutes and 46 seconds. It was 9 minutes and something, 21 seconds. I don't know. But they changed it after they branded it into the psyche, just like they waited to release, or actually someone leaked it in the end, the body-worn footage of the officers. Someone leaked it, and the Daily Mail said that it fell in their laps. So I was in Costa Rica, and I'm like, I'm going to contact whoever wrote this. I look, this is another synchronicity. This guy was my editor when I used to leak vapid gossip in Hollywood at InTouch. So I spoke, I called him, I spoke to him. He wasn't interested in any of my questions, my findings. And he goes, what is it with all you conservatives? You talk about George Soros. I hadn't even told him I'm a conservative, which is, I guess, what I am now. But yeah, so I don't know if that I went rambling.
Well, it's you mentioned the twin component to that. First time I saw George Floyd, I go, holy shit, that guy looks like Steven Jackson from the Indianapolis Pacers. You know, I watch enough NBA basketball. I know who Steven Jackson is. Guy looked exactly like him. I just thought it was a coincidence. Then I find out that they know each other.
Right.
What? Yeah. How? What?
And his father was a Mason. Benjamin Crump is part of the Boulé.
Yeah. That guy is sketchy. So let's address it's easy to be dismissive of the secret society components to not just this story, but a lot of stories. It's real easy to be dismissive because it gets into some speculationville and it sounds kind of crazy. And if you're not a part of that secret society, it's easy to go, oh, you guys are all crazy. I get that. I fully understand that. And I'm willing to accept that to a certain extent. But there are secret societies that, and they have their own rules for how they do things. And it may be easy for me to say that's dumb. It doesn't matter to me, but it matters to them. So therefore it has to matter to me, because if it matters to them and they're doing things in accordance with rituals, timing, they're saying certain things. They've got, forget mob connected attorneys. They've got Boulé connected attorneys. And for those that don't know, that's like the black secret society. I had Bishop Larry Gators on a while ago. We talked about Boulé. It's, you know, the big club, but you ain't in it. It's like, that's the big club for the black entertainers and wealthy people and things like that. Again, easy to dismiss it, but let's talk about it a little bit, the relationship of Benjamin Crump in this, because he was the attorney for Trayvon Martin. You mentioned Joel Gilbert. Joel Gilbert did a documentary exposing the Trayvon hoax, or I think it's called the Trayvon hoax.
Trayvon Martin hoax, yes.
Yeah, so there's something going on here. You mentioned Eric Garner, I Can't Breathe. And you also talked about how it seems like he's got a desk full of cases and you could pick any one of them. That's something that I said early on, which was, why George Floyd? Why are we putting him on a pedestal? Why not Tamir Rice, the 15-year-old who gets shot literally one one thousand, two one thousand, bang, as after the cop rolled up on the scene, shot him in the back. That seems like somebody you would elevate, put on a pedestal. We're not going to stand for this police brutality. You just rolled up here and shot a 15-year-old kid in the back. That guy wasn't elevated to hero status. Eric Garner wasn't really either. I mean, he was kind of in the news, but he didn't fit the profile. Then all of a sudden George Floyd did. And I went, you know what he reminds me of? He kind of reminds me of Rodney King. And I was living in South Central Los Angeles when the Rodney King riots happened. I was going to college there. I saw what that happened, but not because of necessarily just the police brutality, but because he was a flawed individual with a bad reputation, just like Rodney King. Rodney King, big dude, scary, intimidating guy, driving really fast, a ton of you know, rap sheet, pretty long rap sheet. Not exactly the perfect guy that you want to elevate and make a hero. Same thing with George Floyd. I saw the same thing. I go, we're going to elevate this guy. We're going to build statues of this guy. I'm not saying he should have been killed or anything like that. I certainly am not saying that. I'm just saying that of all of the innocent, let's just say innocent black men that are wrongly killed by police, this is the one you want to make a hero. This guy's no hero. I mean, I'm not thinking that he should have been killed in this situation, but why was he chosen? Why George Floyd and not one of the other case files on Benjamin Crump's desk?
Yeah, I mean, that is that's a lot. One, I want to just let's talk about the Freemasonic symbolism, and that I think maybe a lot of us were like, okay, what's the deal with this? These 33s, and like, is this like people are just making a big deal out of it? So as I'm documenting and I'm writing, I bold every time I come across 33. It's a signature. So one person, I was on Ricky, and one person is like, why the riots didn't start on 33rd Street. I don't doubt that. That's not the point. The point is the media is telling you. They're using that as their signature. At least one article says it starts on the riot starts at 33. Then he said, oh, well, El Nuevo is 2709 Lake Avenue. Yes, that's right. But Basim Sabri's office is 3003. When you look up George Floyd's old addresses in Houston, one comes up as 3333 St. Augustine. Oh, it's just a coincidence. Derek Chauvin's squad is 330. It's the 911 calls, two of them that were released, one that wasn't, and there's a reason why, because it links to the cover-up. Well, when you listen to it, it's at 833. So is this God's way of communicating? Is it just us finding patterns? There's too many. Then if we look at the themes, okay, the twin themes, okay, there's Stephen Jackson, there's a chapter called Tale of Two Autopsies. There's these twin autopsies, there's the twin cities, there's the death under the Gemini, which is the twins, and there are other instances of this theme. So to them, who's part of this secret society, it is hidden in plain sight. This is, again, a signature. Right. It's a 666. It just so happens he's 6'6". Oh, Remdesivir, they just have allowed for babies 6.6 pounds. Why the F are you saying 6.6 pounds?
Right. It's weird.
So it's a signature.
Yeah. And the Freemasons, for those that don't, and I don't know a ton about Freemasons, but there's Joachim and Boaz, right? The twins, the twin pillars. There's a theme that runs through Freemasonry that has to do with twins. So that's, again, that's just kind of why.
And I talk about it in the latest article that I wrote for Activist Post, and a lot of people love this stuff. Other people are like, oh, it doesn't say anything. And I'm doing an investigation, and I'm also documenting, and I'm laying out everything. And in the end, only at the very end, will I give what I believe happened. I think this was used to go from virus to violence, that people were getting sick of the lockdowns and they continued them because now things were burning. This has caused the most damage since Rodney King, $2 billion in damages. And I believe they used fire, which is also an element that they use to get rid of a lot of evidence for a money laundering operation. Now, what can I do to prove the money laundering operation? Well, I can say, oh, Jacob Frey, he's been accused of money laundering. If anybody gave a crap about this black man, what happened to the fake money? So I applied for a FOIA with Secret Service. They sent me, after a year, a memorandum, and it talks about the bills that were, one was on the floor. You could see in my trailer, there's Maurice rips up a 20, and then the 20 that was given to Chris Martin. Well, there was money shoved in the seats, right? The memorandum doesn't talk about that fake money. We know that in January of 2020, there was $800,000 in $1 bills from China brought in. Again, if anyone gave a crap about this man, why don't you talk about the fake fentanyl, which is the number one killing reason for death in this country, and that comes from the Mexican cartel with ingredients made in China? So nobody really cares about this. They don't care.
And again, sometimes you're in the evidence accumulation stage where you want it all. Now, some people might say, well, the 33s and the, you know, all that stuff, that doesn't really mean anything. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe we'll get to that. You get to the point where all that stuff gets cut out. But in the evidence accumulation phase, you want everything. if you're seeing a bunch of threes, I want that too. Maybe we're able to dismiss it later. Maybe there's no Freemasonic connection to it. Maybe that's all just a dead end. Fine. We can sort that out. But it is worth mentioning that it is at least a topic, and it is something to consider, because had this been George Floyd, who the media didn't care about, it wasn't filmed and everything, nobody would think anything of it. But because it took off and it was exploded, not just in America, but around the world, it was a worldwide thing. We understand. I would love to get one of my stories to go worldwide, right? International, you know, it would give anything for something like that. That doesn't happen accidentally. That's a coordinated decision to make this thing explode the way it is. Now, I'm not trying to discount the anger that someone would have for seeing something like this, you know, police doing this to a guy and the guy dying and everything. I'm not trying to say that anger was manufactured. I'm just talking about the amount of cameras and the elevation of this to a national story that ran for months and months, trial of the century, you know, all of this stuff that came out, the revolutionary component to it. I've talked openly about George Soros being involved in color revolutions, Rose Revolution, Orange Revolution, you know, all of these happening in Europe and Central Asia. And then that this was the Black Revolution, the Black Lives Matter Revolution. It's got, yes, Soros fingerprints all over it. He's the number one contributor to the Ferguson riots. He loves this sort of stuff. He was kicking in money all over the place. The brick fairy showed up with Acme bricks, like the fucking Roadrunner and Coyote, you know, like just, hey, look at all these bricks that just showed up on the corner. That stuff doesn't happen on its own. It is made to happen. So who is making it happen? Who is telling the media this is the story? Yes, you know, right. So when I see all of that coordination, that makes me not dismiss the 33s. Now again, it might turn out that there's nothing to that. But I get suspicious when everybody at every news station that is pretty good at ignoring what's really going on all of a sudden takes an interest in one guy in one city, in one instance of one case of police, right, brutality, where this stuff happens on the regular. And you could literally pull any one of these guys every single day. You could find an example of this that would be a big of a story, but it wasn't. It was George Floyd, and it happened for a reason. So what is the reason?
So Darnella, who's a rich woman now, I caught
the one that filmed the footage.
Yeah.
Stan. Okay.
Yes. So she was 17 the day before. She does a Facebook Live and she says, yeah, coronavirus was fun, but I got to stack my money back up. And a year before, on March 13th, 2019, scrolling on her Facebook, which is now private, there's a picture of a cake, a black chocolate cake that says revolution on it. So I went to look at, what is March 13th? Oh, that's a United Nations holiday to eradicate racism and xenophobia. So are these people primed? Are they compartmentalized? Because, for instance, why I also think it's a drill is Ed Cherini, an independent investigator, I interviewed him to tell me about criteria for false flags, what to look for. So for instance, when it's multi-jurisdictional agency, when all of a sudden at 10 o'clock at night, this is now a crime scene where we have the FBI, the BCA, the MPD, and we also had fire, and there's a lot of fire department, EMS, and there's a lot of rookies. Genevieve is a rookie. She's not a rookie, but she trains for live exercises. There was indeed a live exercise that was designed for duty to intervene, which is now a policy all across the United States, where the most senior officer at the MPD had never known it was a policy.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that they use these in Hegelian fashion to keep on edging towards this police state or minority report or privacy eradication. And it inches along, and every time they've set the bar high, so they're creating a momentum. And you know, Eric Garner had his role, so they keep on inching up. I want to talk as far as the speed. First of all, if you, Charlie, were on the scene and you the footage that was held by Keith Ellison, the AG, corrupt AG with the BLM leniency, Antifa rather, sorry, dedication towards Antifa. So if you were on the street and you are resisting, and then you say, I need some water. Like I joke and I say, oh, would you like a menu, George? Would you like to order something?
Right.
You are being arrested. I couldn't get away with such things.
Water. Yeah.
And then think about the actual, he's pronounced dead at 9:25. Benjamin Crump is already doing exclusive TMZ. There's already a presser at 11 o'clock on the steps where everyone's masked. Sorry, because everyone's masked, because conveniently overnight is when at least Jacob Fry put in those mandates. So if you look at body identification process, which prior to Rona, you would need to go in person. You don't call on the phone and state that your next of kin has died. So how is it that he's already retained for this case and at 11 o'clock in the morning when a medical examiner started slicing into George Floyd at 9:25 the next day? And so once you look at things and you're saying, who broke this story? So I look to see, how did this break? How did they get this chick's footage, right? This chick. So you see that it's uploaded, and I don't have the details on the company, but it's a company that will make you money by uploading footage and then syndicating it. I'm a journalist of 25 years. I've never heard of this company. How the fuck does Darnella know to upload it and when? So then I found the journalist at the Star Tribune and I'm like, hey, did you break the story? And he said, I wouldn't say that. If someone was like, Miriam, did you break the story? Fuck yeah, I broke the story. I live on that. Right. I don't care about money. I care about credit and my hard work being acknowledged. So
a 17-year-old girl who made the film of this knew the following day, like within hours, to go to some company that you'd never heard of as a journalist of 25 years to upload it, where that footage can then be sold, licensed. And of course they do this with stock footage. There's plenty of these companies out there where if you need a high speed, fast motion of a traffic, or a sunset happening really fast, $5, you can buy whatever. You can license this footage. Right. She went to some obscure company and did it that way and knew right away.
Well, she uploads it that night. She says
that night. She didn't even wait till the night. Okay.
She says during her live that she'll do it in the morning. The day after George, this incident happened, she says that she went to a bonfire because it's Memorial Day. So, okay, when now you're so horrific torture, you lie and you say that you want to shield Judea, your cousin, from this, a 9-year-old. But I see you on filming with a big smirk on your face. And when she comes down the street, I'm looking at the Cup Foods footage, and it's conveniently her expression is blocked when she takes Judea to the door. I see for a glimpse, she has a little smirk, and then she goes and she positions herself behind the bus stop. So that night, let's say she puts it on Facebook. I don't know at one point that it was uploaded and it went viral, but I know the journalist that helped have it go viral. Now, the next day, I have this on my Gab TV. She's performing with her huge, big fake eyelashes. She's talking, I'm the one who filmed this. And it's like, first of all, who are you talking? Who are you performing for? Who's shooting you? And that is very telling that she's, And she almost lost it at this federal trial. She was called to the stand and she almost bowed out because of pressure. Now, in the case, there was also another Freemasonic clue or drop, is that one of the many kids of George Floyd is called Mason Floyd. And I have a footage of Benjamin Crump talking to him. So he's so emotional. He's talking to him. The guy who covered this slows it down. And you can see how he's cueing him. And if you watch the Trayvon Martin hoax, without a shadow of a doubt, this guy committed witness fraud. We know that for sure, that he's capable of that, that he's assigned to these stories and then he co-opts them.
Whoa. When did George Floyd die? Because in that footage that you have, when there's a Middle Eastern man saying he's already dead.
He dead already.
Yeah.
So when I interviewed Chris Martin, the ambulance takes a wrong turn and it's a straight shot. And I found that strange. I found it strange also that they opted to do load and go. So on one hand, they say that the bystanders were rowdy and disruptive and used them as an excuse to go on 36th and Park Avenue, which is odd. And then on the other hand, they say that the bystanders were more helpful than the actual cops. And so which one is it? And when you look, I looked at what's the average time that you resuscitate someone, because they were at it for an hour, like really dedicated. And then
they had the machine on him.
Stryker.
In the back of the ambulance, it's the automated machine that does chest compressions and has the oxygen bag. So it wasn't even a guy necessarily doing it for an hour, getting himself tired. They had a machine set up that was doing that. So if anything could have just kept going, it would have been that, right?
Before the machine, Thomas Lane, one of the rookies, is literally doing compressions, but yet he's found guilty of failing to intervene and doing enough, which is not true. And just to say, I think that they have useful idiots and that the rookies are training. This is a training.
How many rookies were on that scene? There were four cops there.
So Thomas Lane, Alexander Kang, who's black, they're both rookies. Genevieve, who just happens to be on her day off, which is a firefighter, also a rookie. When they go, by the way, if you look up the stab room in Minneapolis, it's a number one in the country place for resuscitation. The man, the physician at the time was also a resident, aka a rookie. So there was a lot of rookies. And like I said, one of the people who testified was in charge of training. And they took the MPD training manual and they went really granular, that it was like the manual was on trial. So, and then you see, so just to answer about he dead already. So I interview Chris, I get a sense this is a real person. He's genuine. He's distraught for real. And he says to me, he was already dead. He goes, everything that happened after is for show. And then I asked him, by the way, when you went to testify, did they have to nostril rape you? And he volunteered and he goes, I'm not getting the vaccine. This was maybe 8 months ago. I said, oh, that's interesting. Why is that? And he said, it's two new world order. So this boy has experienced real racism and police brutality. So he's naive to realize the extent of the coordination, but he knows enough to say New World Order.
And Chris again is who?
Chris is the boy who took the $20. Okay. He's the one who took the $20. He goes
in cup foods.
Yes. Sorry. In cup foods. And he goes out twice to try to retrieve that and had said he would put it on his tab. Mm-hmm. So there's something else I wanted to say. I mean, I just feel like, it's when you put out all these details that don't make sense. Like I said, you create this tapestry. One in itself might not be enough, but when you realize all that's going on, the effery involved. And so, okay, so he says that he felt George was dead. So then by accident, I'm listening to the footage and I'm playing it over and over again because I want to hear. And then I hear this Middle Eastern, the store, they're Palestinian Arabs. So it must maybe someone from the store. And he says, he dead already. And then I played it again. Mm-hmm. So that would collaborate and reinforce what Chris Martin, because I'm going to take it. I believe him that you would know when a life is snuffed out of a body and when someone's like, oh shit, that person's now dead.
Yeah.
And so what were they doing afterwards? Why didn't they treat him on the scene, which when that increases is something called ROSC. You want to get a jolt, and it's increased by doing it at the scene and not loading and going. And then when you learn, okay, now they take him to the stab room and they do another 30 minutes of resuscitation. Like, yo, he's dead.
Yeah, it was
weird.
It is weird. Yeah. You hear him talk saying, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I need water. He was taught mama. He's calling for his mama. And then,
but he's not. That's his girlfriend's nickname, by the way.
Also. Oh, that's his girlfriend's nickname is mama. Okay.
In his phone, it was said that Courtney Ross is saved as mama.
Gotcha. Okay. So he's calling for her. Not
for Maurice.
Yeah. So then it goes quiet, right? Like then he stops yelling. And is that what sets the guys off to make them think that he's dead? Is that he just stopped saying anything? I mean, cause that's reasonable because he was saying, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And then he stopped saying anything. And it seemed like that might've been the point where, you know, and the whole time the crowd is like, they weren't being overly rowdy, but they were riding that cop's ass. They were like, this is some bullshit. What are you doing? What are you doing, man? I forget what he kept saying. It's fucked up. What are you doing? I mean, get off his neck.
Bro, you're a bum.
You're a bum. You're a bum. Yeah, he kept calling him a bum. That's what he was. You're a
Donald
bum.
Donald Williams, who is a bystander, who was reported to have ties, with BLM, but I can't tell for sure when I call him Little. Well, his name is Little Nabil. There's a boy that comes out. You could see in the trailer. Goes, he probably OD'd. He was high off his cracker. And Donald goes, I'm here to help. He goes, I don't need your help. Go back in the store. I know your parents. I know everybody. Like, don't help. So he's like, oh shit, someone's here disrupting a real person. Disrupting. So for whatever reason, there's four brothers who own Cup Foods. One of them has been very forthright. I owe him another call. I haven't talked to him in several months, but he said we got caught up in a black and white thing. And he told me Maurice is a snitch. George is a snitch. So how can we collaborate that? So my suspicion was Maurice is a snitch. Well, I did a FOIA and now I have it on proof. I have the proof that says that Maurice was
for who? The feds?
Yes. Yes.
And he got his case sealed?
He got his case sealed. What happened was he escapes. He said to me, if I'm such a bad guy, because Courtney won't talk to him, the woman who owns the car won't talk to him, he'd given bad drugs to George before. And he goes, well, if I'm such a bad friend, why is George on his deathbed saying, Reese, I love you? He says, Reese, I love you. So this was a suspicion. And then and now I have it in proof. So what happens? He escapes. He leaves for Houston. On June 2nd, he gets caught as a fugitive out of state. The next day, the case is sealed. The charges are dropped. Mm-hmm. And he's found to have the beginnings of intellectual disability. Mental health. And then the day after that, he's doing Good Morning America, like all mentally ill people do. You do the rounds. You're a crook and we're glorifying you. So why did he speak to me? I called 2 weeks. I didn't expect him to pick up. He thought I was someone else. He thought I was the mainstream and he was trying to sell me footage of him and George Floyd at Chuck E. Cheese. I believe that he was promised things. The Floyd family has turned their back on him. Ooh. So he's not getting any of that $27 million.
Have they gotten the money?
I'm sure they've gotten the money by now. I mean, the $27 million civil suit was called last summer in the middle of the jury selection. Crump had a presser and it was a tactic to spoil the jury.
Of course.
Jury. So if Maurice feels like he's getting effed over, I found out that he doesn't have his boy. So they took his son away from him. He has a young boy. The mother, the baby mama signed out her rights, but he wants it. And he still has outstanding warrants. After the George Floyd incident, he was arrested. And so I think he was talking to me during a week where he's like, screw the system. They're not taking care of me. And he doesn't quite know who I am, although I enjoyed speaking to him. And I told him, I said, I think this person's an informant. And he's like, now you're thinking. So there's someone that I'm going to sit on this until the book and the movie. But there's a cover up that is linked to Maurice. And in any case, now he's not returning my calls. It was hinted that he was going to get immunity, or, you know, he pled the fifth. And I'd like to say that the appeals lawyer that I am talking to and I had offered to help, he just put out an 82-page appellant brief that basically outlines all the blunders of the justice system in regards to Derek Chauvin getting a free trial, a fair trial. And it's like, I feel like I'm a just person. I'm into justice, and I'm good at really tapping into someone and seeing, like, this guy, we all deserve as our constitutional rights to have a fair trial. And he did not get a fair trial.
No, why? It was tainted from the beginning. There was too much. I mean, everybody knew about it. Everybody knew about him. Benjamin Crump announces that civil verdict while jury selection is going on, which obviously is like saying, hey, well, you know, we're going to sit you down for this fair and totally impartial trial. Oh, did you hear that the civil thing? They gave him all this money. So he must be, he must have.
Right.
Guilty of that. If they're not going to give this guy $27 million if he's innocent, right? Oh, well, have fun sitting on your jury. And they sit them out there. That's not good. You mentioned Maurice. Let's get back to him. This is yeah. Buddy. Was he gang affiliated? Because he's got red pants and a red hat.
Yeah, so there's
not that necessarily means anything, right. but no, given the circumstances, I feel like it's probably a fair question to ask.
Well, I also looked into how the Sinaloa cartel operates. It's not the way it used to be, where you have El Chapo, and then it's very decentralized, and they do work with the gangs. This is blood territory. So when I interviewed the woman who told me Derek goes by the Warlord of Precinct 3, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, Derek wasn't supposed to work that day. It was his day off. For whatever reason, he was called in. They were literally about to have lunch at 8 o'clock. They were having their lunch, and they call a backup, and then they call it off. And Thao, in his own words, says to the BCA, which is the Minnesota version of the FBI, says, I said, let's go, because these guys are rookies. And, it's in gangland. So when I told the police activist, she goes, oh, that's a joke. Anybody who knows what's going on knows that the MPD works with the Bloods. And in fact, after they were going through their defunding the police, they gave power to these community people to hold the peace, many of them which were from the Bloods. Mm-hmm. And so there's that component. And then in a FOIA document, I saw that he has tattooed Maurice block bleeder. And so then I went, what's a block bleeder? And it's someone that sells drugs, no matter what, 24/7 hustling to relieve basically drug addicts. So that's tattooed on him. When they approached him to be an informant, he was living in a halfway house affiliated with the Salvation Army. I think it's called Harbor Heights. They found a semi-automatic in his locker. They found cocaine in between his butt cheeks. And they approached him to become an informant. He was participating in the beginning and then stopped, which is why maybe there's this gray area. Is he an informant? Is he not? Now, for the record, also Alexander Kang, who is a rookie, who's black, he applied, he put in a motion with the courts to get everything on George Floyd being an informant. Unfortunately, Nobody from the police wants to talk to me. I'm waiting to speak to someone who left the force after George Floyd just to get her perspective. Mm-hmm. Because the sad thing is that probably a lot of good cops left. And there is no question, by the way, to tell the audience that MPD in Minneapolis has a lot of crooked. It's a lot of effery there. And they call Minneapolis Mordor. The MPD is definitely corrupt. I just would argue that throwing one guy under the bus or four guys under the bus doesn't do justice. But this is part of the ritual, right? You sacrifice someone and symbolically, energetically, they become the face of all of that and you wipe out your sins.
Mm. Again, back to this, it might not mean anything to us, right. But it means something to them. Let's wrap up with this last one, this last question. What killed George Floyd? Fentanyl or a knee on the neck?
Well, the new broken telephone version, if you were to cover or read my coverage of the federal trial, the drugs play no factor and it's straight up asphyxia. But when you look underneath the roof, so to speak, and you learn that medical examiner Andrew Baker was bullied, coerced, pressured to add asphyxia. And I would also argue that possibly it's something else that killed George Floyd, that one of the detectives himself on trial says that a lot of these fake fentanyl are laced with undetectable things. And why do I say maybe something else like cyanide poisoning, perhaps, is that if you look in which fentanyl death or you look in which an amphetamine death, that it's not quite, it's not mirroring. So it's possible that something else, but that they wouldn't even be able to find it if they even looked for it. And just to say that early on, I have a recorded call with NMS Labs in regards to the toxicology. Now, a year later, I'm not even able to get through the red tape of the bureaucracy. But that if you don't look for something, you won't find it. And early on, you remember Michael Baden, the Hollywood pathologist. Well, Michael, where is your official autopsy report? It's not there. And why didn't you show up at the trial? Not there. So I definitely drugs played an impact, but that's not what is being told. And that's no longer the mainstream narrative now.
Jesus. There's a lot. There's just a lot to this case. Like you said, some people may have George Floyd fatigue, but I think it's important to get over that because this is a symbolic, really, of what can happen if you allow these people in positions of authority that control the flow of information, the media, the police, the coroners, all the... If you allow them to keep a tight hold on this information, they can do whatever they want with it. They can spin the story however they want. And the next thing you know, it's Black Lives Matter. It's burning. It's mostly peaceful protests, burning down buildings and all this stuff to celebrate a guy who there's a big story that we don't know all the details of. But so American of us to immediately jump to conclude, oh, the media said this, so let's just burn down everything. It was really frustrating to watch. I got problems. I got problems with everybody in the situation. I don't like the cops. Don't like the way they behave. I understand also if you're going to be acting super sketchy, you're going to draw the attention of the police. Are these guys have a relationship where they know each other? That's not normal. The questions about being an informant, that throws a whole that does not fit with the mainstream narrative. So there's a lot of questions. When do you think the book will be out and available for people to purchase? Because I get the feeling that this is a book that if you allowed it to, you could write forever, because there's always going to be more information coming up. But as a writer myself, I know that at some point you have to say, I'm done.
Basta.
When are you done?
Well, I'm not trying to profit off George Floyd. I am trying to be able to pay an editor to finish and to cover costs of all these exhibits, $2,000 plus that I've paid. I mean, that doesn't answer your question. I'm with all that's happening in the world, and I mean, as a journalist covering, I'm working every day. I'm 80% done. I was trying to time it with this trial that's coming up. Initially, the government and the media were vying to keep the cameras in, given that 23 million tuned in to watch the Derek Chauvin live stream gavel to gavel coverage. So I might, if I'm lucky, be able to get into the they're only allowing two journalists in the room. So all that to say, I think realistically it will be the fall. And I do have a publisher after many rejections, which is really frustrating given all my work, all my cred.
Track record.
Yeah, my track record.
You've done a lot. This is not your first rodeo. You're not just somebody that just decided you were going to write this story. Like, you're a legit journalist covering the thing, yeah. You know, telling stories they don't want you to tell, of course, but that's okay. We love that. We love that. But yeah, I can understand why some book publishers might be turned off. They're not exactly the most courageous people out there.
No. So a big shout out to Logosophia that is very excited to carry this title. And I have an editor that I want to pay. I did a lot of shows and I was like, nobody's even given me $5 of 21 days on Give, Send, Go. I said, is that also censored? It's so demoralizing because I tried, like in this interview, to share like all that I'm doing to give justice to this. I'm not a half-assed person. Like, we live in an age of mediocrity. To make all these calls, to apply for all these FOIA, to really be like, oh, there's a rock? I'm going to look under it. I want to look under every rock. I want to get as much footage of everything I can get to do justice, right, and do a proper investigation. And so, yeah, I would love any support. Now I'm giving an advanced copy for a donation to give something in exchange.
Where can they support your work? What's the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions or if they want to support you or
well, if I can, I'll give my email, but I don't know if I shared the Give, Send, Go. Can I share it with you?
Give it to me. I'll put the link in the description, or if it's easy, I don't even know. Is it something
I'm putting it here?
Shout out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Give, Send, Go.
Give, Send, Go, Maryam/Maryam Hinane. So Maryam and Hinane, Henein. And so for whatever reason, when I look, like someone tested it and they gave me $33. I know who it is, but it was six days ago. And before that, it's 28 days. So I don't know. I feel like there's something bizarre. I'll just say, like, Chase Bank closed me down. This was now a year ago. But someone who leaks information to me said, Maryam, did you look at the relationship between it's Chase, JP Morgan, Vanguard, Rothschild, that they invested $30 billion to eradicate racism by giving loans to minorities. So when I called and I said, well, last I checked, I'm brown. Mm-hmm. Like, how about my brown life? Why did you cancel me? They did not give a reason. They said, we don't have to tell you. So the attacks that happen on people, real people that are real journalists or creating content, it's very subtle and it's very tailored to that person. It's very hard to tell someone. I think now it's normalized that there's all this cancellation. But it's like I just would really like to be supported to bring this to you. And people who know me know I'm not driven by money.
No. Well, if you're out there and you have more money than time, throw a little money Maryam's way, because she's doing the work that the mainstream media, you know, those high paid journalists that are out there supposed to be doing this. She's doing their job for them, because God knows they're not to be trusted. And take a look at honeycolony.com as well. You can do some great shopping there. Maybe if not for you, for friends and family, spread the word. word, Miriam. Great. Thank you to be back again. Thank you, Charlie. So happy. Obviously, yeah. We'll see you in Union of the Unwanted again. And for those of you that are interested, the website for me, the octopus of global control.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions, and I will see you all soon.